So lovely as always to sit together. And today, I think this will be perhaps a continuation to some degree, at least about what we were talking about last week. Sort of coming from a couple of different places. The first, there's an article in the Wall Street Journal about America having a deficit of listening problem and looking more through the political lens of here in the States, real difficulty in being able to have conversation across the aisle, as it were, and sort of at our peril, right? And this amazing upwelling of movements that are happening about bringing people together to engage in different difficult conversations. On the 21st of April, there's I forget the name of it, but I can pull it up in the article, but this, it's going to be a day of across the country, different Zoom rooms of people volunteering to come together and have challenging conversations. And I want to link base this really, this talk today in the Dharmic teachings of listening. And Thich Nhat Hanh spoke about deep listening and deep listening, compassionate listening is not listening with a purpose of analyzing or even uncovering what has happened in the past. You listen, first of all, in order to give the other person relief, a chance to speak, to feel that someone finally understands him or her or them. Deep listening is the kind of listening that helps us keep compassion alive. While the other speaks, Paul Tillich writes that I think it's Paul, and I think this is the quote, but sort of love is the capacity to listen with the availability to be changed. Those aren't the exact words, but that's the sentiment of how often do we allow ourselves to really listen with an openness to be changed by someone else's experience, their viewpoint, their stories. And even just thinking about the stories we have about ourselves, about others, how we can concretize them. This is what happened to me. This is my story. This is me. For the difficult people in our life, we can sort of one-dimensionalize them into a fixed narrative. And being able to really, through this practice, see clearly, there's a lot of potentially unreliable narrators in our own mind. Can we really believe what we say? And I know the first time I came to really wrap my mind around this notion of not believing the thoughts is like, oh, wow, how great. You know, Byron Katie's invitations, is it true? Is it really true? How do you know it's true? And what if it wasn't true? You know, and again, one more saying of sort of who are we? Who would we be without our story? And the ways in which the stories that we tell about ourselves and our lives can limit us and limit our ability to connect to others. Well, this is what happened to me and I can't possibly relate to that experience over there. Or what's happening more in this time of incredible polarization is this way of, if I can't even believe that you think that. I can't even talk to you because I think you believe that. And I'm reading this book, Why We're Polarized, by Ezra Klein, and a little bit of an Ezra Klein jag, as a quote of late brought a couple of his podcasts in. But he writes, we are, and this is, he's thinking, he's in this book is a lot about our political system. And I don't mean this to be a talk about politics, but thinking sort of both on a systemic political level, which does influence us. And then how do we meet what's happening in the larger platform, as it were? And then on the personal level, how do we respond in a way where we can listen to ourselves, listen to the world that is in such desperate need of this compassionate space? This is from the book. We're so locked into our political identities that there is virtually no candidate, no information, no condition that can force us to change our minds. We will justify almost anything or anyone so long as it helps our side. And the result is a politics devoid of guardrails, standards, persuasions, or accountability. Earlier in the book, he writes, there is a logic of polarization, is to appeal to a more polarized public. Political institutions and political actors behave in more polarized ways. As political institutions and actors become more polarized, they further polarize the public. This sets off a feedback cycle. To appeal to yet a more polarized public, institutions must further polarize. When faced with yet more polarized institutions, the public polarizes further, and so on and so on. And one of the sort of themes of this book, which I have not completed, is the sense that it's not so much something broken, or that if you lift one person out and replace that person with someone else, it doesn't change anything because the system is so entrenched in the sort of feedback loop of polarizations that we know this. It's so much fed by social media. This is not a rant against that, but just being able to look at what's our role. And this morning, reading Dr. Martin Luther King's, I didn't realize this speech, the Remain Awake Through the Great Revolution, was his actual talk at Oberlin College in Ohio, commencement speech in 1965. He speaks, "All I'm saying is simply this, that all mankind is tied together." And we know this quote. "All life is interrelated and we're all caught up in an inescapable network of mutuality, tied in a single garment of destiny. Whatever affects one directly affects all indirectly. For some strange reason, I can never be what I ought to be until you are what you ought to be. And you can never be what you ought to be until I can be what I ought to be. And this is the interrelated structure of reality." John Donne caught it years ago and placed it in graphic terms. "No man is an island entire of itself. Every man is a piece of the continent, a piece of the main." And then he goes on toward the end to say, "Any man's death diminishes me because I am involved in mankind. And therefore, never send to know for whom the bell tolls. It tolls for thee." And by believing this, by living out this fact, we will be able to remain awake through the great revolution. He goes on, "We have inherited a big house, a great world house in which we have to live together. If we can learn to do this, we will remain awake through the great revolution." And in the same talk is this beautiful line that we will overcome because the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice. And these images of we are all part of this great house and we must learn to live together. And we're seeing what happens when we choose not to live together, right? The D.H. Lawrence, like, vitally, the human race is dying. Right, there is a perilousness to the ways in which we are afraid to engage, to reach out across the aisle, to listen again and listen to ourselves. Sometimes there's so much going on and we can have so much anxiety or fear or distress, despair, suffering, that it's really hard to sit and listen to our own minds. They're like, you know, when we have an inner bully or an inner tyrant, or someone's just telling us we suck or our life sucks or we've made all these mistakes, it can be overwhelming. So we distract, right? We listen, we watch TV, we listen to books, we find ways of moving away from what can be the discomfort in our own mind. So these teachings of deep listening, this extending of compassion to our own experience of like, oh, sweetie, it's loud in here, or it's harsh, can we soften? Give the mind something else to do. May I be happy. May you be happy. May I be peaceful. May you be peaceful. We can reach into the toolkit that this practice so affords us to say, is there another way to relate to what's happening in my own mind to find some peace, some calm, such that I can then move out in the world from a place of a little bit more space, a little bit more compassion, because I'm not at war with my own mind. I'm not moving away from the war that is going on in my own mind. There's a little bit more sense of being able to be embodied and landing in this form here. I didn't actually listen to the talk, but I read the talk of Krista Tippett, who hosts the podcast On Being, and she was speaking with this young reverend, and by young, I mean sort of mid-30s, in Nashville, and they were having a conversation about, and this woman, Jen Bailey, works a lot with multi-faith and sort of intergenerational, sort of how do we have conversations across age lines and faith lines and lines of different backgrounds. And one of the things I so love about this group that we don't quite necessarily get the same feel of virtually is that there are a lot of different age groups in here. And sort of we've had our the elders of the group, and sometimes we get 20 somethings here, and sort of there aren't that many spaces that I'm aware of where particularly women can come together of different age groups to be able to share in this experience of like, wow, it's really hard to be human. There's a lot of suffering. Some that is just inevitable, comes with this realm. Some we add to it, but being able to learn and listen. And I realize the irony of me saying that since I do a lot of the talking in this group, but this ability, when we do have a chance to share together, this, I love it. This is amazing opportunity to hear from different people at different points in their lives. Okay. So this is from Jen Bailey. There's something about the fact that we are mortal, that there is a definite beginning, middle, and end to the arc of our lives that is at once humbling, but it also frees us up so much. It does allow us to have this generational view that, well, like I'm here and one day I'm not going to be here. And so I care what I can do during this time. And at the same time, I can pass that on, that which came to me as a seed, as a blossom, and let someone else plant it, let someone else tend to it. And that's so freeing. And if I could go back and talk to a younger version of myself, I would say, it's okay not to build the whole house. It's okay to lay a foundation and be satisfied in that. Yeah. We don't have to take it all on, but we can do what we can in this life, and we can enjoy this life knowing we're doing something. We're moving. I don't really like this analogy, and we're pushing the rock along. We're moving along. We're participating in the way that we can. And can that be enough? In this conversation, so cross-generational accompaniment, great line, is essential to meeting the century's callings toward belonging and healing. And there was a time where we lived much more in much greater, closer proximity, such that the intergenerational life was much more known and familiar. I'm the youngest of seven, as I've shared before. I knew one step grandmother, and I only knew her briefly, and she terrified me. So I didn't have the experience of grandparents. And that seems to be more so common these days, that we live separate from, sometimes by design and necessity, that we are not necessarily close to those that are blood relatives, or even being able to locate ourselves in an intergenerational arc. And I think, again, this is sort of a loss of our time and this amazing upwelling of movements to kind of mend that and heal it. In this conversation with On Being, she writes again, this is Jen Bailey. I have this theory that millennials were called to be cartographers, to be map makers at a time when institutions were crumbling and the world was shifting in completely different ways. And so we're creating blueprints or trying to survey the land and understanding it. And that the folks who are coming behind me, Gen Z, man, they are builders. They have this no-nonsense way of cutting through things and a fierce sense of urgency that I both honor and respect. And I worry about for them because I think that they are facing so many existential crises at once. And they haven't quite had enough of the time or experience to know that they don't have the answer to the questions all at once, but they're coming in with a sophistication and a nuance that I think is the stuff of building the new infrastructure, whether that be spiritual infrastructure or physical infrastructure of our time. And I'm so excited to see it. And I got teared up because I have a Gen Z child, and I know some of you do also, in the sense of what these kids are inheriting and their real feistiness with which they're meeting the world. But this way of being able to include the entire arc from the elders to this feisty Gen Z is pretty remarkable when we allow ourselves to listen, right? And to see the different perspectives and the nuances and the power that reside within each phase, right? And in that conversation with Jen Bailey and Krista Tippett, they're talking about looking to elders in the sense of embodiment that can come with that grandmotherly love or grandfatherly love. And I know my mom said that the 70s were really her favorite decade. Like, she's already done everything. And sort of the 40s were hard. Too many kids, did a lot of work, a lot harder. But by the time of the 70s, she kind of made peace with everything. And that was really her, one of her, again, her happiest decades. I want to pull up a poem that I hope is right here. Sorry for this. In this notion of the generations that are happening, being able to listen into the different generations and honoring. I might not be able to pull it up. I usually have paper and I can shuffle the paper, and now I'm sort of shuffling. Yes, I found it. Okay. One of my favorite poems, well, that might be saying a lot, but a poem I really love that speaks to this sort of passing on of naming of generational, passing the torch, as it were. And I'm a little early in sharing this poem in terms of an anniversary, but we are about the Parkland shooting in Florida was mid-February about 4 years ago. So I just want to bring this in, but in large part because of this, of the wording of this poem. Allison Luderman, The New Breed, for Emma Gonzalez. And for those of you who remember, she is the woman that the young gal, I think she was 18 at the time, who stood before hundreds of thousands of people live in telecast, and she gave that speech in which she remained silent for 6 minutes, which was the amount of time that her classmates were shot. This is the poem for Emma Gonzalez and other student activists. Can I read this without crying? I see her on TV screaming into a microphone. Her head is shaved and she is beautiful and 17. And her high school was just shot up. She had to walk by friends lying in their own blood, her teacher bleeding out, and she's my daughter, the one I never had. And she's your daughter, and she's everyone's daughter, and she's her own woman in the fullness of her young fire, calling bullshit on politicians who make money from the gun makers. Tears rain down on her face, but she doesn't stop shouting, and she doesn't apologize. She keeps calling them out, all of them, all of us, who didn't do enough to stop this thing. And you can see the gray faces of those who have always held power contort utterly, baffled to face this new breed of young woman, not silky, not compliant, not caring if they call her a 10 or a troll. And she cries, but she does not stop yelling truth into the microphone, though her voice is raw and shaking and the Florida sun is molten brass. I'm 3,000 miles away, thinking how Neruda said, the blood of the children ran through the streets without fuss, like children's blood, only now she is here. They're only raising a fuss, shouting down the walls of Jericho. And it's not that we road weary elders have been given the all clear exactly, but our shoulders do let down a little. We breathe from a deeper place. We say to each other, well, it looks like the baton may be passing to these next runners. And they are fleet as thought, fiery as stars. And we take another breath and say to each other, the baton has passed. And we set off then, running hard behind them. Yeah. So this baton that is passing to this new breed, this new generation, and wherever each of you fall in this arc of generations, can we include the range of generations into the conversation to say, how is it to be alive? How do we do this? How do we come back to that great house that we have inherited? That by our very denial of that house, we are participating in burning it down. I'm going to ask each of you to close your eyes. And just taking a moment to check in. That was a lot of words. And some challenging ones at that. Check in, how's the body? Checking in again with what you're resting, you know, allowing there to be a grounding back into the body, your own experience. And the first question here is really to locate yourself in a way in this intergenerational arc. You know, those of us who are of the grandmother age, those of us in midlife, those of us younger lives, those just starting out into adulthood. Do we have much contact with other generations? Kids coming up. Those of us who have grandkids, those of us who may be surrogate grandparents, those of us who don't have it and aware that there may be grief here in this inquiry. But the power of perhaps locating again, and I love this image of the intergenerational arc, if we allow ourselves to locate ourselves and then look around. Does this work? Do I want more? How? How can I connect more? What might it be like to have more ties to different viewpoints? To be able to make a commitment and or perhaps an aspiration to listen to voices, opinions that are different experiences. To pull from the Metta Sutta by not holding to fixed views. Can we listen in with a love that allows us to listen and be changed, to have those hard conversations that we can so shy away from? A hard conversation doesn't have to be laden with conflict and distrust. Can we marshal our own courage to step into brave spaces and say, okay, please talk to me. Tell me what makes you come alive. What do you love? What scares you? I'm going to guess those kinds of questions bring us together, allow us to touch that garment of mutuality and the shared humanity of our experience. What do we love? What scares us? What touches us? What do we long for? Stepping out of a systemic movement to polarize us and rather saying, no, wait, I want to live in that great big house with all of my relations, the brothers and the brotherhood and the sisterhood of humanity. How can I do that? One moment at a time, one breath at a time, one thought at a time to settle our own mind. To say, yes, I want to step into those conversations. I'm going to stop there and thank you for your kind attention.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.